Welcome to the NOLA Drink Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink, food, and culture in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning into the NOLA Drink Show, friend. Yep, it is our first new show of 2021 that we recorded in 2021. And happy to be back. We took our typical holiday break for a little while and coming back refreshed. Coming out of the gate with a really good show. I'll get to that in a second. If you are listening on the radio, friends, today is January 15th, which is, of course, the actual birthday of Martin Luther King Jr. And we've heard this quote mentioned, I have anyway, quite a bit lately because it's very poignant given things that have happened recently. And Martin Luther King said, "True peace is not merely the absence of tension, it is the presence of justice." And I could not agree more, friends. Time to accept truth. Time to accept justice. Stop the stupid. Please stop the stupid, okay? The election was free and clear of widespread fraud. It is a legitimate election. If you believe otherwise, you're foolish. Many, if you're a radio listener, there are many people on this actual radio station that spew garbage and mistruths. And that has what led us here to where we are today and to what happened on January 6th. Time to grow up, be adults, be Americans. Seek truth and seek justice. Got a really good show for you today, friends. As I mentioned, about exactly 1 year ago, we did a show on the Turning Tables Foundation organization. It was started, a program started by my friend Ture Folks. It's a really, really exciting program, and it's evolved. They just finished their second go-around, and we talk with Ture about the program. We talk with some of the educators and mentors in the program, and we talk with some of the students who recently graduated in this second iteration, as I just said. Really inspiring show, a super inspiring group of people, something that's really needed given things that are going on in this country and on our planet these days. So I hope you find it really, really informative. It was a real joy to record. I want to give a special shout out and thanks to our friends at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum for hosting us while we tape this show. And you'll be hearing more about the Southern Food and Beverage Museum and the Nitty Grits Network, a podcast network. I've talked about it a little bit, but you'll be hearing a lot more about that on this show moving forward. And I will tell you, if you want to catch the show that we did about Turning Tables, about the foundation last year, you can go to our website. It was last January, as I mentioned, about exactly a year ago. Funny how that works, right? But yeah, last January, just search for Turning Tables there in the little search bar right at the top of the website, and you will see it there. But really inspiring conversation here coming up, friends, in our featured interview. So I look forward to bringing you that. We're going to have some really good shows coming up here. We're going to pay a visit to a St. Rock Market and talk about what they're up to. We're also going to have a show very soon. Very excited about this. Two of my very good friends, two legendary cocktail guys, Jeff Beachbum Berry and Paul Gustings. We're going to just do a show and talk stories. And believe it or not, we've actually never had those two on together. Both have been on multiple times. And we were talking about it. It's like, hey, how come we never had you guys on together? Well, we're going to rectify that problem here very shortly in a couple weeks. So be sure to catch that show and more coming down the pipeline here on the NOLA Drink Show. Friends, thanks for listening in. We're going to take a short break and be back with our featured interview talking with the team from Turning Tables. Come on back.
Well, my bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. I can't buy no beer. Well, I'm standing on a corner with the bucket in my hand. I'm just looking for a woman that ain't got no man.
Brought to you by the St. Rock Market, a local food hall featuring 12 unique food and beverage entrepreneurs serving globally inspired meals from barbecue platters to Mediterranean cuisine. Located at 2381 St. Claude Avenue, the St. Rock Market is open every day of the week for breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, and cocktails. We offer online ordering, curbside pickup, and both indoor and patio dining. Learn more at strockmarket.com.
All right, right, everybody, welcome back to O'Brien Diaz here at WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. Yeah, as you know, we are here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in Central City, New Orleans, and we're talking with some of our friends from the Turning Tables program. During this segment, we're going to talk to a whole bunch of people, but during this segment, I'm joined by Ture Folks, Denicia Taylor, and Jeffrey Wilson. And Ture, my friend, I'm going to start with you because you are the founder of Turning Tables, and give us the rundown. What is Turning Tables, buddy?
In a nutshell, Turning Tables is all about equity. So we are a program that creates platforms for BIPOC people of color in New Orleans, create platforms, give them the tools, and provide mentorship throughout the whole process. So essentially giving people in this community opportunities to excel and exceed where doors were formerly closed, and support system that's can't be stopped, that's amazing and super supportive.
In hospitality industry, right?
Yes.
And with a bartender focus, correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you could say bartender focus, but yeah. I mean, it's more of like a family. You know,
sure.
That is hospitality focused, but it's, hospitality adjacent as well, I would say.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. And give me just a brief, we did a show about a year ago with you when you did the first round of the program. Mm-hmm. So just give us a quick overview of how it works.
So, essentially Turning Tables is a 12-week program. The first few weeks, don't even really delve into anything related to bartending. It's beer, wine, foundations about mental health and industry issues related to industry lifestyle maintenance, giving them a sense of self, and just making sure that they have solid foundations coming into the industry and solid habits. And then beer and wine comes after, before we get into the history of cocktails. And then the last 8 weeks is more spirits focused, cocktail focused, and externship. Externship being real life practical experience in actual bar spaces throughout the city.
Very cool. So you partner with local bars and
restaurants.
Yeah, right on. Yep. Cool. Now, a big part of the program, I believe, is education. And Denicia, you're instrumental in providing some of the educational components to the program, correct?
Correct. And I'm happy, and thank you, Ture, for I made it to season two.
I made it to season two.
Yeah. I think the first year it was cognac. No, it was rum the first year,
yeah,
Whitney Plantation.
Yeah.
So I've always been fascinated with bar culture and spirit world and things like that. So it was so cool to be a part of a program that was a different way of learning. You know, we could incorporate not only our history, our Black history, but along with the skill set you need for the industry. So,
and tell people briefly what you do, and so what makes you an educator, or how did you get involved? You know what I mean? Your qualifications.
My qualifications. I am a self-proclaimed Negro historian. So I pair the spirit world with cultural influence, great cocktails with our history. I think there should be no more boring learning, especially what we're going through now and the education system changing. So we're pairing, of course, the spirit world and what you need to know about what you're drinking and what you're putting in your body, but along with the history that's connected to it. I think, of course, with a cocktail, you can get somebody to sit down with a great cocktail to actually listen to. It makes it more palatable. Like I was, talking about earlier, pairing that with a good soundtrack is some knowledge you can actually retain while drinking.
What's the name of your business, too?
Cocktails by Pop.
Cocktails by Pop. Cool.
But everybody knows me at Chicken and Champagne.
Chicken champagne. Okay. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Dang
it. It's a great combination.
It is a great combination, indeed. No argument here. Jeffrey, way down there at the other end of the bar, aside from making a killer spin on a Negroni on the fly, thank you. Tell us a little bit, what is your role with Turning Tables, and why are you excited to be a part of it?
I guess my role would be to be that grizzled old veteran that's coming back and telling the students that this is the way it works or this is not the way that it works, and working on solutions towards moving things further, because we're in a different time now. COVID has made the industry. It's crippled the industry, but the industry was failing to begin with. I met Ture last year at Portland Cocktail Week, actually 2019 now.
Yeah.
And he told me, well, I mean, I knew about the program, but I met him personally, and he told me what his visions were and what he wanted to do. And I said, I'm moving down, and I'm back here because of this program. I'm back here because things have to change, and I feel in my heart that the people that have graduated from the first year and the second year are those arbiters of change.
Mm-hmm. Would you, Jeffrey, do me a favor, tell people, two-part question here, a little bit about your background, but then I'd like you to elaborate, aside from COVID, elaborate a little bit more on what you meant by how the industry was failing before.
I started bartending in college in New Jersey. My first bar job was actually a sort of a heroin chic bar in Chicago called, well, it became 1056. I can't remember what the name was before. I've worked in sports bars. I've worked in beer bars. I've worked in gay bars. I've worked in cocktail bars. I've worked in clubs.
All over the country, pretty much?
All over the country, okay. Yeah. Chicago, Pittsburgh, worked in the speakeasy in Pittsburgh. One of the first ones since Prohibition. I worked at the Violet Hour in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
I worked at the Multnomah Whiskey Library in Portland, Oregon. Let's see. I worked at a restaurant called Ocotillo down in Phoenix. I won Best Bartender 2014 in Chicago and 2016 in Phoenix. I'm a guy who's trying to sort of swim my way through gelatin, basically, to have my voice heard. And I think New Orleans is the place to be because of the fact that there are more people here that look like me than anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And there are more people in the industry that look like me than anywhere else. But the thing is that when it comes to stuff like cocktail bartending, there aren't enough people that look like me than anywhere else. And this is why I'm here.
Is that what you meant by the industry was failing before?
Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. Because I mean, we've always been hanging on by a thread. There's never been like this whole free and clear. It's always, we're one step away from disaster. Mm-hmm. COVID was that disaster. Now it's making the industry look at itself and go, well, maybe we're not doing this right.
Mm-hmm. Burn it down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Trey, would you add to that, please? And we didn't really get your background either, but why don't you add to that first and then?
So I started in New York City as a journalist, actually. So like hospitality was not my first foray as a career. Had background in journalism and photography. And I worked for the Dominican government, and I came back and the options that were open to me, you know, this is like right after September 11th, were limited. So I kind of stumbled into hospitality by accident, first as a server, a gangster server, by the way. And then one of the things that happened was, you know, I worked in the top restaurants in the city, and the first restaurant I worked at never gave me an opportunity to do anything but serve. And I saw my coworkers kind of constantly pass me and surpass me and got opportunities to work the door, work behind the bar, do everything, and go to the next restaurant, and I was just like server Teray. So I got super frustrated, and my first kind of rebellion against that was to go to another restaurant group, super successful restaurant group called Happy Cooking, and I helped them open up their second restaurant and worked every position, including bartending. And when I got my start there, it also was parallel to the emergence of Sasha Petrosky, Milk and Honey, Employees Only, all of those kind of cocktail bars opening up in the city. But I just didn't feel like I was worthy ever at any point, and then have the encouragement to feel like I was worthy. The first time I actually bartended was by accident. You know, they asked me to bartend a party, and there was like 40 people who all came in, and it was all these, you know, LGBT community, like men that came in and just ordered all these different variations of martinis, and I just had to like the trial by fire. I just had to like crush it like right away. But it was a very nurturing environment. You know, we made our own bitters. We got to be a part of a bar program, and that was very informative for me. So when I came here, I thought that I was going to shift into management, and ended up realizing that, like, you know, my heart was behind the bar, and that's where I wanted to be. So I started bartending in different bars around the city. And as you know, to reiterate Jeffrey's sentiment, you know, you don't see yourself a lot in craft bartending, and you don't see people that encourage you into different positions. So one of the jokes here is that people will be like, oh, you work everywhere, but it was very strategic for me. It was very strategic to, like, learn how it was to work with different restaurant groups, learn how it was to work in different environments. And I was taking notes to know what's a safe place to place someone, and like, what is that work environment like? And
so looking at the culture at each particular
looking place. At the culture of every place and looking at all the major players. I've worked for every major player in the city with the exception of a few, but like, just looking at what those cultures are like, and very strategically also knowing that that's, you know, I have a relationship with these people. This is how I'm going to place people when the time comes for externships or for jobs or anything else, because I feel good about those people and I feel good about that environment. And I don't feel good about these people, just knowing their culture. So a lot of my, like, working here was working at first and then very strategically working throughout the city before I found a home at Coquette, which was our home in a lot of ways. They did a dope graduation for us. They were very instrumental in my growth as a bartender. I wasn't just making, like, normal drinks. I was making, like, drinks that you can't even think of, in terms of, you know, the first time you present a cocktail to, like, Mike or any of those chefs, they're like, it's good, but, like, you could do better.
You could do better.
This is all right. Speaking to the sentiment of how this industry needs to change, you know, being in all these environments and realizing that, like, I'm the only person that looks like me, was something that you get comfortable with, but you shouldn't. Like, it's not something you should, like, anybody should be comfortable with. We bring value to every space that we inhabit. And also, I'm from New York. So the one thing about turning tables is, like, finding some people from New Orleans, finding New Orleans talent. Because people are asking me, like, what's good in New Orleans? How you, like, you know, where should I go? What should I do? I'm coming from, like, a pretty much, like, step away from their perspective. I'm not a tourist, but I live here, and I've lived here for 5 years now, but still, in their eyes, I'm still not a native New Orleanian. So what better way than to have someone from here kind of guide the ship towards what you're supposed to be doing when you're here and you're inhabiting these spaces? And I think it's really simple what we're doing. It's really simple for restaurant owners to just, like, hire proactively, just to look at someone that has no talent or has no experience, and just to see the value in that person in other ways, and to build their growth. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem is, I talked to a chef the other day, and they were like, you know, I would love to do something like what you're doing, but I just don't have the time. I don't have the time to train someone up because, you know, we're going too fast. But, like, you always have time. You always have the time and the space to train someone to mentor their growth. It's just, I think it's just an excuse at this point. I think, you know, everyone can do it.
Yeah, we're having a conversation these days in this country, people bogging down on the process,
yeah,
as opposed to the reality, right?
Yeah.
Right. We have about a minute and a half before we take our first break. Denisa, you're an entrepreneur. What, by starting your business, what was your motivation to do what you did? Just quickly.
Honestly, getting behind the bar, like I would like to say, getting behind stage and seeing, as a newcomer in the business about 3 years ago, seeing that the bartenders were the life of the party, literally the heartbeat of the establishment, but being treated less than. Mm-hmm. So I was like, there's absolutely no way. Not only, you know, on top of that, the only raisin in the rice pudding. So I was like, actually, in order to change the game, I got to be a part of it, but I've got to create and stand by my own business, but my beliefs of where we should be. Like I said, when we get behind the bar, we are on stage. We are a huge part of running the business.
You're providing hospitality.
Yeah. We're real entertainment.
Talk. You're entertainment.
That's vibes, right. Yeah, everything. Yeah. So right. I wanted to create something to where that was the main focus. The bartender was as important as a client on both sides of the bar. That's how we make it happen. Mm-hmm. So
sweet.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's take our first break. We're going to talk to some of the students. These guys are going to come back in our podcast only segment, Another Shot with Nola Drinks. We're going to continue the conversation, friends, about turning tables. Come on back.
The Mayhaw is the craft cocktail bar located in the historic St. Rock Market. Join us every day for happy hour from 4 to 7 p.m. and weekly specials like Tiki Tuesdays, Whiskey Wednesdays, and Thrifty Thursdays. The Mayhaw offers local craft brews and a robust and ethically sourced wine selection for enjoyment with your meal on the patio or for carryout. The Mayhaw is excited to present Mayhaw Mobile, a cocktail, beer, and wine delivery service. Learn more at strochmarket.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening into the NOLA Drink Show, friends. Happy to have you here as always. Yeah, back with our first newly recorded show here in 2021. Happy to be here in 2021 for the most part. We're talking about the Turning Tables program, and now we're going to talk with Tim Stevens. We'll start with you, Tim, and also Jerry Guilford and Alana Peck. Jerry and Alana are recent graduates. I don't want to call you recent students because you graduated. You got the piece of paper, so yes. We got that covered. But Tim, I'm going to start with you, Tim, because not only you helped run the program this time around, the second iteration, but you were a student the first go through.
Yeah, for sure. It was pretty cool. The first time around, I decided to leave the coffee industry. I've been in that pretty heavily for years, in and out of different sectors of the restaurant industry. Tried to get into the bartending community. It was kind of a difficult journey at first, trying to find something. Ended up, through a roundabout way, ending up in the Turning Tables program. Went through it, learned so much, just incredible opportunities, met so many incredible people in the city, and really just kind of fell in love with the community that exists so uniquely in New Orleans, in the bartending community. After kind of getting through that program, Teray ended up bringing me in as a bit of a consultant / someone with a unique perspective, having been through the program, and kind of after working, seeing the things that we did so well, the things that maybe could do more of, and really just having that insight, I think was an asset for the program. So going forward, I came on in a co-directing fashion, doing some development work as well, and just really having my feet on the ground so recently. I think there was definitely a level of insight and direction that I kind of tried to help shape the program in this time around.
Awesome. And did you get a gig like right out of the gate?
Oh yeah. I mean, I ended up kind of finding some work as the program was starting, so I was kind of like bar backing here and there as the program progressed, and that just turned into bartending, bar backing, just gigs all around. I've been working in a few bars in the city. Most recently I was at the Chloe, bartending, doing some stuff over there. Beautiful crew over there. I feel like it's interesting once you start doing it and kind of start knowing your stuff, there's just so many opportunities and just all these different facets that you don't expect right away.
Mm-hmm. Different avenues to explore and grow and all that. Awesome. Jerry, what about you? So what got you involved? Why did you want to participate in turning tables and go through the program?
Life-changing events. Like 2020 was like a life-changing moment for me. But like even throughout this journey, things have changed. But like I wanted to like have a purpose, like because so many things was happening. I was like, I want to be happy in this life. If I died today, I knew I wasn't going to be happy because I didn't like live out my dreams that I wanted to do. And like, don't get me wrong, I have so much on my plate. And like, it's like people like, how are you going to do it? I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I know I will do it. Like, I just want to do it. But like when it comes down to the bartending, this is one of them things that was just like, I cannot live without bartending. Like, it's like beyond this regular bartending, is learning the craft of beers, cocktails, wine, mocktail, just infusing flavors together. Like, I don't even know. Like, it's just change. And that's what I love about Turning Tables, because like when I joined this program, I knew what I wanted, but I didn't know how to do it. And Turning Tables became that foundation that started guiding me. And I love how the program was set up, as in, because I thought when I went into the program, I'm just going to learn how to straight up bartending, learn how cocktails. But they set you up mentally first. Like, they have you, like, if you ever need any type of help with, like, a therapist, if you need somebody to talk to, they made sure that it was, that they have our back no matter what, during this program, even after this program, stuff like that. And, like, But like when I came here, like when I didn't know, like I just felt passionate about every single thing that I learned. And then the people that they brought on that was teaching us, like I thought I knew some things, but this program taught me that I ain't no shit. I mean, stuff, nothing
yes, sir.
At all. I'm sorry.
We'll be fine. It's all good. Were you working in hospitality before? And that's kind of what made you gravitate towards being a bartender?
So like, be honest with you, I was doing customer service at first, so that built my foundation with guests. But then I wound up working at a Libre. It was a small restaurant, and I'm so happy that was my first start. Like Blake and Conrad, I'm so happy they started that bar, because that was one of them bars that you had to cook, that you had to serve and bartend at the same time. Sometimes you're the only person there, so you have to do all that. So I had to learn to multitask. And they were so serious about the food and that the cocktails they had, and was just rum-based cocktails. I'm like, man, that blew my mind. And then I went to Koshan Butcher, and like they have a fantastic bar program. I'm not going to say it's nothing like Turning Table. I could definitely say that because I feel like I wasn't set up. But don't get me wrong, I learned a lot. But that's what's like sparked my interest, yeah.
Gotcha. Are you from New Orleans?
Yes, I'm from New Orleans.
Okay, cool. Alana, same question pretty much that I asked Jerry. What made you want to get involved and why?
So I actually have a pretty different background from the average bartender. I came up in academia. I have recently been a professor at adjunct professor at several universities. I am actually on the path to finishing my dissertation this August.
Oh, sweet.
And
I want to know.
Sociology.
Oh, sociology. Cool.
So that's been my background, and I've just worked in education. And I mentioned this to them several times of every time that I would leave the classroom or I would finish the day's program, me and all my coworkers would go where? To a bar. And we would have happy hours. We would share drinks. We would have good times. And I always was intrigued by the person behind the bar. I was always intrigued by the cocktails that were created and the experience that I had there. And I just loved it so much and wanted to be that, wanted to get into that space in some sort of a way. Living in New Orleans, of course, spirits are huge here. And just having different experiences with different sorts of people. And I just really wanted to edge my way in. I tried to apply for a couple of jobs and was always either turned away or told to be a dishwasher or things of that nature. And never really put two and two together that there was a barrier of sorts for people of color entering the industry. And then a friend of mine reached out and told me about this program, and I was like, absolutely. So I got in, thank goodness. I'm so thankful. And I've had an amazing experience, really starting from square one. We did an exercise in the first week of serving, and I was awful. I did not know to offer water. I did not know to do any of the things. And it was funny, but it was really a learning experience. And I can say for myself, I'm pretty proud of myself. I've come a long way was able to even win a competition middle of the program and whatnot. So this has really been an outlet for me to express creativity and to just try new things. And it's been a wonderful experience for sure.
These things obviously don't have to be a mutual exclusive. Are you thinking do you want to stay in academia and then also be behind the stick kind of part-time, or?
My goal in life is to be Superwoman.
Okay, so, right on. Sounds like you're a long way down that path already, I can tell. Sorry, what was that?
I tend to do both.
Oh, you want to do both?
Okay. Keeping a job either as an instructor, adjunct, or who knows, full professor, and having my own business on the side as a mobile bartending business. Cool. I'm trying to jumpstart that this year, so letting that grow and continuing to teach.
Awesome. You guys got about a minute or so before we're gonna take a break. Jerry, real quick, what are you thinking you want to do? Like, what kind of bartending, or do you have any idea?
Right now, I'm just trying to elevate my level, basically.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
I'm just trying to just conquer where I'm at right now.
Learn as much as you can.
Yeah. I don't know my direction, but I just say any opportunity that comes to me, I'm just going to take it and let the universe take its way.
Awesome. And you're getting the tools to do it,
yeah,
right? That's
absolutely.
Cool. What about you, Tim, real quick?
Sure. I mean, I think, like Jerry said, like always learning. I think that's something that'll never change. But I've been, recently just trying to excel in my craft and just figure out the areas where my other skills can intertwine. Doing a lot of like building and kind of design work on the side, some consulting, just kind of growing in adjacent industries at the same time.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, y'all. We're going to take a little break. I really appreciate it. We're going to rotate a few more people in here in the next segments of Friends. Stick around. We're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back.
brought to you by the St. Rock Market, a local food hall featuring 12 unique food and beverage entrepreneurs serving globally inspired meals from barbecue platters to Mediterranean cuisine. Located at 2381 St. Claude Avenue, the St. Rock Market is open every day of the week for breakfast, lunch, dinner, coffee, and cocktails. We offer online ordering, curbside pickup, and both indoor and patio dining. Learn more at strockmarket.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Thanks for listening into the show, friends. We're talking about the Turning Tables program. As I've learned, pretty much everybody talking right now, except for one who we're going to go to, is a Capricorn. And the one who is a Libra we're going to go to first, Roxy Eve Narvaez. And Roxy, aside from not being a Capricorn, we'll let you stay. But you provided the wine education for the program. Tell us a little bit about what you do and what you did for the program.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. I did the wine portion of the Turning Tables curriculum this season, which is really, really exciting for me. Wine in general has been my passion for most of the 13 years of my career of hospitality. I'm originally from New York City, and I fell into restaurants in New York City hard and fast and big the minute I could. And I worked in everything from hotel restaurants to nightclubs to Michelin stars to fast casual. And I, you know, kind of had this like massive ascension. And then I realized that in order for me to see the world and in order for me to really like curate what felt like a passport to me, wine was that ticket. Wine was my ticket. It, you know, it encompassed the all of the realms of like geography and science and sociology and taste and art and history. It was just all encompassing. And so wine really was that passport, that focus for me to expand my world. I really, really became focused in my career in wine for about five years ago. And that was it actually when I left New York. And so I've lived in Virginia, I've lived in Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts, Los Angeles, and in New Orleans. This is my second time living in New Orleans. And what I primarily do is I now like focus my wine education as a looking at wine from an anti-colonial lens and looking at wine from an anti-establishment lens. We really do know that wine is a hyper-exclusionary industry. Like, it is, you know, everything that people tell you about wine is opulence, it's money, it's access, and typically we don't get access to the good stuff. Like, you know, if you're of lower class. And in addition to that, until very recently, wine brands were not marketing to Black and Brown communities because they just didn't think that we could afford it. Mm-hmm. And which is completely a lie, because we can talk about rappers who talk about Riesling and rappers who own champagne brands. And
come on.
Pardon?
I said, come on.
Exactly.
Say it louder.
And as we gain access to spaces, you know, wine is one of those things that if you don't know about wine, you're looked down on. And I make it very, very deliberate in my style of education when I educate about wine. I try to break down that divide of old world versus new world, because it once again elevates the European palate, and it refuses to acknowledge the amazing wines that are made in the Americas and beyond. And secondary to secondary to that, you know, because so then how do we shift from that, from old world and new world, which is this terminology that everyone knows, what do we shift to? We shift to terroir-based wines and winemaker-based wines. Like, there's absolutely language that exists to decolonialize our mindset in regards to elevating whiteness in wines and elevating Europeanness in wines and allowing for all of our palates to be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. Secondary to that, or tertiary to that, would be the systems that exist already. For example, the Court of Master Sommeliers and those other wine education systems that have been, I guess, beacons of, once again, white superiority in this industry, because when you go into those rooms, the people that are testing you and the people that are judging you don't have your palate, don't have your access, and don't relate. And so I really, really wanted to break that mold. And, you know, Turning Tables was my first, like, organized foray into being with a group of BIPOC students and making that into fruition. And so it's been really exciting. I could go on about this all day because I'm sticking it to the man. I also work in immigration law, which is like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, all of these things tie back together in regards to creating access for our communities. And so in the Turning Table program, I was able to, you know, educate some of these really, really awesome students, all of who have so many life experiences that are not just based around, like, academia is one of them, and street smarts is another one, and experience is another one. And, you know, every day, like, I learn about my palette through the palette of all of these people that I've been around. So, okay.
And that's another aspect of what we were talking about earlier, about the industry sort of slipping on a banana peel. You know what I mean? With the Quarter Sommeliers that has just happened this year, with the scandal that has happened in the past couple of years, I have a friend, her name is Maxine, who was part of that group that up in Portland, who was supposed to get their sommelier, you know, supposed to be certified, but yet somebody cheated, and then they got cheated out of that whole thing. So they started to dig, and they started to dig, and they started to dig, and finding all of this stuff that is coming up now. This is, you know, it's another black eye for the industry, and most of us don't want anything to do with it anymore. We really don't. So this is why we're here. We are forming. We are doing something again. We're building up from the ground up again. Yeah.
Right. So and it's providing your own seat at the table, essentially.
Yeah,
making our own table. Making our own table.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. Making our own table. Because we have the clout and power and energy that the black and brown bodies in this room and in the industry and beyond is unmatched. Like, I'll be honest, they could never work as hard as us. They could never be as charismatic. They could never be on top of all of that and more, while going through the adversities that we have gone through.
Right.
So, like, not to disparage, like, there are absolutely amazing white professionals and beverage professionals, but do they go through the things that we go through? The systemic racism, the not just systemic racism, but, like, the overt racism that we experience sometimes from guests, from employers, from the systems. And so, ultimately, like, just like you mentioned, it's got to change. It's got to change, and this is change. And we're here, and they can't deny it anymore.
It's very true. Denise, would you add your perspective to that?
I sure will. I'll give a short story. Literally happened not even 5 minutes ago.
Got about 3 minutes before I got to close, just so you know.
Less than that. Boom. So I get a call from New York. Hey, we've got a huge conference with black and brown educators, and we need 100 bottles. We were going to go with blank service, which is a huge service owned by a Caucasian man, or we're going to go with you. Pause on that. Why wouldn't you go with me? But I'll tell you why. In their eyes, I've got two things against me. One, I am a woman. And two, because sometimes you got to phrase the email differently just to get by. That literally is the new world of code switching. The second thing is that I'm black. So imagine that you've got a conference with black and brown educators, and you are confused about going with a Caucasian-owned company that it's already made millions, instead of going with a company that legit is owned by a black woman who is a Negro historian who just made it to Imbibe 75.
Imbibe 75, though. Are you Imbibe 75?
Nice. Imbibe, like, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. But I say all that to say, even with this hard work, and we've shed so much light in 2020 and even before then to why the industry needs to change and how it should, but even down to this point, it's still a question. Do we go with what makes sense, or do we go with someone who's already had a better chance than this young black woman? Why is it up for question? The other company shouldn't be even in the running.
Right.
You don't have the qualifications.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
I do.
It's pretty condescending.
Right.
It's very condescending.
That's exactly what it is.
Absolutely.
I'm proud that was under 3 minutes.
Absolutely. Well, hey, can somebody tell me, just because we're going to close out the portion of the radio show right now, where we can find Turning Tables online? Terry, you want to pop in? Or Jeffrey, do you know that? Or?
Yeah. I mean, I could do it.
Please. Yeah, just website.
www.turningtablesnola.org. O-R-G.
Perfect. And donations welcome, right?
Yes.
Financial support welcome. All right, friends. Everybody here is going to stick around for another shot with Nola Drinks. We're going to continue the conversation. But if you are listening on the radio, friends, I do appreciate you being here. Remember, as always, be kind to one another. Use your turn signal. And until next time, cheers, y'all.
What are you doing in a place like this? I said I called your name, but no one came. Now I see you become just like the company you keep. Then he said, all these saints and all these sinners will try to bend your.
All right, everybody, up another shot with Noah Drinks. Thanks for listening in here, friends. Happy to have you. Happy to be back with some new shows here in 2021. Thanks for bearing with us as we got caught up on some of the shows from the end of last year. I've explained that enough to you. This show was recorded about 3 weeks ago from the time that the podcast drops today. So there you go. We got some great new shows coming up for you. I'll talk about that when we close things out in our parting shot. Going to bounce back to the Southern Food and Beverage Museum for our conversation with Turning Tables. Here we go. All right, everybody, up another shot with Noah Drinks. Thanks for sticking around, friends, or listening to this portion of the podcast, as it were. Everybody's been saving a special word here during the portion of the radio show. Anybody want to add something colorful to start?
Sure.
Please.
Fuck.
I love this shit.
See, there was a great deal of restraint for the first three sections. I mean, Jerry did kind of drop the ball briefly in one of the segments.
Oh, of course.
But it's all right. It's all right. But other than that, so we've been saving that up. So, hey, anybody who wants to answer this, maybe that was involved with the first part of the program and then now the second part of the program, What have you guys learned doing the program a second time? Like, what's different, Teray, if you want to take that, or anybody?
Sure.
What's different this time than the first time, importantly?
So I think...
Step in there, man.
I think the first iteration of this program...
Yeah, step in. Don't swallow it, son. The
first iteration, I think, I thought, like, you know, I'm a bartender, so I thought very much from a nonprofit side of things, and nonprofits think from the perspective of, like... soothing strummers, like flies on your mouth, African style, like you're like, it treats it like a charity in a way that's not empowering. And I was a consultant on that first iteration where it was very New Orleans focused, and the demographic was very different, but not less powerful. But I do think they were a demographic that was underutilized and underseen and not given platforms, and a large portion of that class were people from New Orleans that don't have the resources, don't have the platform, don't have any of that, and I love them with my heart. That's like that first group is like those. That's like my first baby. This year, what we learned was that there was such a thirst for, like, not just, you know, people that were just like raw talent that was underutilized, but just people of color in general need access at all levels. So we couldn't be ageist. We couldn't be sexist. We had to think about things from a perspective where it was like, okay, this person is immune compromised, so they can't come to class, so we can't, like, close them out. This person has no experience, but they're fucking dope as shit in terms of their street smarts and what they do and who they are. And this person has experience, but has never been given any access. Like, we just thought about, like, all the things that we can do. Turntables year three is going to be just, like, two parts. It has to be. It has to be, like, you know, it has to be. Like, there's just so much of, you know, like, people want this. Our community needs this. And it's not just here. Like, you know, when I talk to people in other markets, it's like, they're like, yo, you're doing things that other markets could easily do. New York could easily do this. Other markets could easily do this. But they're not, and I don't know why. We're going to tell you how. We're going to show you how.
We're also doing things that most people probably have to pay for.
Right, okay.
The testing that we did, the education that we gave in these 12 weeks, you couldn't fucking pay for it. You couldn't fucking pay for it. This shit that we gave them this year, they're smarter than I am, and I've been in this industry for 30 years. They are. they're out here and they are hitting the ground running better than most people. They don't have to do the shit that I had to do back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
That's dope.
Mm-hmm.
That's dope. That's real talk.
Serious. That's serious. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and Jeffrey, so like, and Terry was saying this, when you're saying year three has got to be done in two parts, do you mean like two different groups?
Because we're going to have more of a beginner's education and more of an advanced education. I think this year we did more advanced than beginner.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody excelled so quickly at it, it's not even funny. Like, there was no times where we're just like, are we just giving them too much information? Because they sucked it all up. They hoovered it all up. Mm-hmm. This was like, we put down huge lines of education cocaine for them, and they did a lot of it.
They did a lot of lines. Right.
Speaking of cocaine. No. You know, it's so funny. So you think about year one and being there. Unbelievable. And you think about year two. I think, in my opinion, the very idea of turning tables was a different way of learning, like no more boring learning. So I think of, you know, the education system and it never changing. Students still going to school around the same time, staying in school for fucking hours and expected to retain information. You know what I mean? And I think it's so beautiful that the second year, the world was turned upside down. I don't think COVID was beautiful. I think the idea that we had to rewrite things like education, I think turning tables is the perfect example. I will say that we did go to the movies and we did go see Do the Right Thing. Of course, we were socially distanced and all that stuff. But the importance of even seeing a film like that, that was education. Listen, but seriously, Do the Right Thing. One of the first movies to address climate control, gentrification, systematic racism, all that stuff in one movie. But as friends, we were getting together and it's so relevant to, you know, how ghetto 2021 started off. And, you know, the Capitol, all that stuff, not to get into politics, but, like, it just shows that there is room for a different way of learning, and turning tables was ahead of all of that.
Yeah, there has to be.
Because Teray is a cocktail genius and just a genius, period.
All right, what's
going on? That's enough of Teray.
But I do want to say something, though. Like,
yeah, Jerry.
Like, going off what everybody said, including Denicia, like, but... the new class was different too. Like, be honest with you, I don't know much about one. I'm happy I had the experience to see an event when class one did at Margie's in the garden wise. But I say the reason why we still was different because we was hungry. And when I want to say how it was with Denise, like 2020 changed us. And like, we wanted this. Like, when you want something, like, everybody in my class was different. Everybody. Some people had experience. Some people didn't have experience. Totally different. But they knew what they wanted, and they sucked it up like I don't know what. I know, like, Alana and, like, Kennedy, there was two people that didn't know nothing about bartending. And when I tell you, from me being in the industry not long, I got to say that, but when they came in and they couldn't even stir or shake, and then they did this, like, this whooping, and you hear the ice hitting from back, front to back, like... Like, that was amazing. Like, that's spirit. Like, that's, like, our determination. Like, I want this. I'm going to do this. And, like, I'm going to craft it my type of way. And, like, that inspired me. Like, it's so much learning to this. It's, like, it's never going to stop. It's never going to stop. And a passion never going to end. And, like, turning the table started that foundation with that. Like, again, appreciate that. But, like, we all agree with this. Like,
yeah.
But on that.
Yeah. Alana, what feel free to add to that, or what was your, I'll ask you two questions. What was your favorite part, just kind of like from maybe a fun or learning perspective? And then what's the most important thing that you've taken away from the program?
Other than winning the contest.
That could be it. I mean, that's a perfectly legit. What did you win? Tell us about that contest first.
So, Mino Made in New Orleans Foundation, they had a competition for their Pass the Peas event. And all of Turning Tables students participated in the competition, and I won.
My drink is
called the Peachy Mariah. It features Sazerac, infused Sazerac. I infused it with cinnamon, peach juice, and a peach syrup that I made with peaches, as well as lemon juice and a cinnamon stick for a garnish. It's delicious. It was inspired by peach cobbler, which is my favorite dessert. And I just wanted to give peach cobbler in a glass, but not too sweet. So something very balanced. And it was achieved, and I won.
Congratulations. Will you make that for me sometime?
Absolutely.
Okay, sweet. Awesome. So and what was your biggest takeaway from the program?
I would say some of the biggest things that I learned, I had no idea how vast the beverage industry is in general. I knew about bartenders, I knew about brands and whatnot, but I did not know the longevity of careers within that field. And it kind of just opened up a Pandora's box of just opportunity for me. I had no idea what was going on. I mean, I was raised and thought the straight and narrow. I spent the vast majority of my life in school, still am. But now I see that there is so much more that I can do, so many more ways that I can express myself within this industry, and so many avenues to take that are both lucrative and fun. So I think that that was one of my favorite things that I took away from this. And then also being able to be myself and express myself in ways that I can't necessarily do behind a desk or in a classroom and whatnot. And like one thing that people often point out to me, I love nails, and I often wear very long, very expressive nails. And many times, it's kind of been one of the ways that I have set myself apart from other people. Ture was just telling me how he showed a video of me making my drink, and they're like, that drink looks good, but her nails. And there are other times, and I just, I take joy in expressing myself, and both through my drinks and just in the way I present, and being able to do that from behind a bar or in my own space in the ways that I create for myself from mobile bartending. It's just really exciting, and I'm so glad that I've had this opportunity.
Awesome. Thank you. Tim, there you are. Can I ask you that same question? What were your favorite part now that you went through the first time, and then in your role this time?
Yeah.
You know, what was your favorite moment or something that happened this past time, and then what's your biggest takeaway from round two?
Totally. I think one thing to note, just between the two cohorts, it was interesting. The first time around, you know, there was a lot of trying to break open barriers. You know, it was the first time around. So, like, you know, even Ture has his influence in the city and knows so many people, and there are a lot of people who are down to support, but it's like we are a new thing. We are everything we do is the first. Everything that we're doing is, you know, trying to break through this ceiling and give access an opportunity. And it's, you know, it's still the case now, but now there's just like an even larger following and supporting partners and brands and companies, you know, and it's just like really, really dope to see as the opportunities grow, you know, and I'm pretty fucking excited for what's going to be happening, you know, year three, like just the amount of traction that we've been getting, I think is just pretty incredible. And it's a testament to the work and the quality of professionals, you know, bartenders and adjacent industry professionals. You know, it's just a testament to the good work that they're doing and that we've been able to accomplish. This time around, I think one of the most incredible parts for me was just seeing how many people globally were down to present, give support in so many different ways, and just, like, be present. Zoom, as difficult and challenging as that can be sometimes, I think is just such an incredible tool and just provides so much more of a reach. You know, it just truly connects places that, you know, was not so interconnected in the past. 2020 was a year that, you know, was challenging, but also I think gave everyone different insight. And for me, I think just the way that we all came together and grew our family nationally, even outside of the U.S., you know, just having that reach, I think, was just pretty incredible.
Amazing. Good answer. Thank you. I think we can maybe leave it there if everybody's good with that. Would you just tell people again where people can connect with Turning Tables, like online and all that good stuff, learn more about the program?
Yeah, so you can find our website, www.turningtablesnola.org, our Instagram, which is turningtablesnola. And then we're also on Facebook as Turning Tables. Nobody cares about Facebook. You're right. I just had to give them that option.
it's there.
Yeah, it's there. We out here. I'll never Twitter.
Yeah, right on. Not on Parler. Fair enough. Cool. Well, and all these friends, all the links and everything to the program will be in our show notes. And it's a wonderful program. And I urge everyone out there, if you're a brand, get behind it. Everybody needs to get behind this program and support it because it needs to continue. Everybody, thank you so much for your time and insight and experience. It was really a terrific show. Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks so much. Friends, I'm going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'll be back to close things out. All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the show. Thanks for being here this week. Happy to have had you here. Happy to be doing new shows here in 2021. Want to give special thanks to our friends at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum for hosting us for the featured interview portion of the show that I mentioned we taped about 3 weeks ago here from today, where the podcast drops. So yeah, and we got some great shows coming up for you here pretty quick. We're going to be the show coming out shortly here. The next one is going to be on the St. Rock Market, a food hall in the St. Rock neighborhood of New Orleans. We're going to talk to some of the 12 food vendors that serve a wide variety of food. Actually, it's really interesting. You know, you got stuff ranging from barbecue to Burmese food. We're going to be talking to a couple of the bar managers there. We're going to talk a little bit about what is a food hall, the entrepreneurial aspects of how it works. Some really neat conversation there. We're going to have a show chatting with tiki cocktail legend and historian Jeff Beachbum Berry, along with another legendary New Orleans bartender Paul Gustings. We're going to have a really great show chatting with my friends Kiata Mincy Parker and Tiffany, the drinking coach Barrier out of Atlanta. And we're going to have a show also coming up for you here pretty quick, chatting with Liz Williams, who is the founder of the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Very, very interesting. So talking about the history of the museum, some of the programs, kind of the mission, all of that stuff going on there, because we've never really covered that before on the show. I do want to encourage you to go to southernfood.org, check out more about the museum, and you can find this show as well as others on the Nitty Grits Podcast Network. I've been talking about that a lot. That's why we were kind of rolling out some of these back shows, if you will, that we had from late last year, because we wanted it to be included in the relaunch of the network, which happened at the beginning of the year. I want to thank my friend Teray Fulks, who is the founder and director of Turning Tables, for organizing this show. Such an inspirational show. And it was really rewarding because we talked about this, but we did a show about a year ago on the first iteration of Turning Tables, the first group of externs that went through the program and graduated. And it was just really cool to see a year later how the program has developed with this second round of externs. And talking with the students themselves, talking with leaders of the organization like Teray, Jeffrey, and so on, and the mentors, you know, also that we talked with as well. And just, it's such a great program, obviously addressing important social issues in the hospitality industry, critical issues that need to be addressed, that the program is doing wonderful things about and doing and make, you know, addressing these things. But then also, you know, taking such a terrific holistic approach to key needs in the hospitality industry, like personal wellness. It's a very complete program, and it's consistently evolving thanks to Touré and the leadership and the participants. It's just a living, breathing thing, and it's just such an inspirational show and an inspirational group of people. Certainly one of my favorite shows of recent memory that we just brought to you, and I hope you found it inspirational as well. I would encourage you to go to turningtablesnola.org. Once again, go to turningtablesnola.org. Check them out. I believe they accept donations. They got some really cool. Click on the merch tab because I got a really cool t-shirt. I'm going to get me one here pretty quick. But that will support them as well. And we will, of course, keep you posted on developments with Turning Tables. Hopefully, you know, maybe in a year when they have the third group, or if they do it sooner, we'll do another show just like this one. And I hope you catch that one as well. But in the meantime, look forward to our next show on the St. Rock Food Market and all the other ones that I just mentioned to you. And take care of each other out there. Friends, be back with the new 2021 show here pretty quick. That's our parting shot. Here's to you.